Turn with me to John. I'm got a New American Standard. This is chapter 20, verse 26. We'll have to speed up because I've only had two cups of coffee at McDonald's instead of three, so I need to get juiced up here. So, what is this? On the calendar, I mean, we still have a tomb there. Look, that's so cool. They had the room full of Kairos training yesterday where they going into the women's jails and stuff, and it was cool seeing them over here doing that. And, you know, that they were training, one of their training sessions. So I thought I would just do just a little bit of like kind of around the church calendar, you know. So last week was Resurrection Sunday. We know it was Easter, right? The disciples are really concerned because, well, they've killed Jesus, you know, and they're hanging out and they're in the same upper room that they had been in. They really liked that place. Undoubtedly, it felt safe and it was really a large space. It'll hold like 120 people at least. It's a big room. So they're in there. They got the doors locked, you know, last week in the evening, and Jesus just pops into the room. I mean, like, did he do a slow fade in? Like, or did he make noise on one side? Like, while they're looking over there, he's on the other side and go, hey, guys. You know, I mean, I don't know. Y'all don't have these questions? I have these questions. Okay. So, you know, he met the two guys leaving town going to Emmaus. And then he disappears when he breaks bread. And they go back to town. And they go and tell the disciples and all this. And Thomas is not there, one of the 12, you know. So Thomas says, well, I'm not going to believe unless I see and the nail prints in his hands and the thing, this place in his side. So now, today, on the calendar, it's a week later. Week later, right? Tonight, they're in the room again. They've got the doors all locked. They're still kind of hiding out. You know, they're not like, hey, you know, Jesus is back from the dead. This is a slow thing. Don't you have spiritual experiences where in the moment you say, I'll never forget this. And within a week or two, your brain has this ability to start questioning, was I really in Korea? You know, in that, you've seen pictures of yourself and you go, was I really in Korea? Yeah. It's like I'd come back from a conference or something, you know, something, see unbelievable things and go, that really happened? Yeah. I'm back at Glencoe teaching art, talking to myself in the mirror. Yeah. You know, the mirror and I talked a lot when I taught. And the closer I got to retirement, the more we talked to each other. So, okay, so this is the part. So, John 20, 26. After 8 days, or really the week, you know, his disciples were again inside, and Thomas was with them, and Jesus came, and the doors had been shut, and stood in the midst and said, peace be with you. And then he said to Thomas, reach here with your finger and with your hands, and reach here with your hand and put it into my side, and do not be unbelieving, but believing. I always like to approach all this like I've never seen it, which is hard to do because the more you've read the Bible, the more you're kind of already in it. But like trying to be like, we've got a lot of stories of Jesus, things he's done. So, but here's more insight again. And I find sometimes that when I can really approach it, my paradigm of Jesus, the place that I'm standing, it shifts slightly. You've got one right now of what you think Jesus is like. And I can guarantee, without betting, that when you see him, it will change dramatically from the one you have now. But I think after that encounter, the next time you see Jesus, it will shift again. This may go out on through eternity. This shifting, this. Do you think it's going to all be over? You know, and the part about the Sadducees, where the, you know, they've come and said about the lady, and she's been married seven times, and then she dies, and who's she gonna be married to? And Jesus says, "Hey, it's not like that. You're gonna be like the angels." Well, you know how we do. We hear that partially, and we go, "Well, we're gonna have wings." No, like the angels. He did not say that. If you're expecting wings, okay, you're special. He'll give you some wings just because you just can't get over it. I knew it. There's always somebody. There goes Karen flying by. She talked him into wings. Yeah.
I thought it was always her.
It's already profound. Already what we've experienced is profound. But then I think it's profound that you're seeing these chairs on the planet, and the center of the planet's liquid metal, and we haven't fallen in. So, okay. Verse 28. So Jesus, Thomas answers and says to him, "My Lord and my God." I bet that's the first time he called Jesus my God. Wow. Now, this is not all capital L, so it's not like the word we have put, you know, vowels into and call it Yahweh, you know, the word the Jews don't even pronounce. YWA, the four letter word. Okay, this is not that word. This is Lord, like Master, Lord. He's been using that word. He's never called him God. Probably none of them have called him God. But they've had a week to be talking. Or do you think they just sat there and meditated for a week? I'm just going to sit here and, Jesus is back from the dead. I would be repeating over and over and over where I was, what I was thinking. I would be asking everybody else in the upper room what they were doing. What were they thinking? What does this all mean? We know he was here last week. Did he really come last week? I mean, he came in the room. Somebody said, "Well, he ate fish." Really? Did you see it? You think he really ate fish? Maybe we're just making this up. This is only the second appearance. Now, he's going to come and go for 40 days, but this is the second one. So Thomas is there. This has gone on. I'll quit building all this up in a second. But I'm trying to say, like, you know, this evolving experience with God keeps going on. Verse 29, Jesus said to him, "Because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are they who do not see and yet believe." There's you probably have a blessing different than being there in person. "Therefore, many other signs Jesus performed in the presence of the disciples, which is not written in this book, but these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah," or the Christ in Greek, "the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." Chapter 21, "So after these things, Jesus manifested himself again to the disciples at Sea of Galilee." I don't know why they got two names for it. "And he manifested himself in this way." Now, this is the third time. So we've had Easter night, resurrection night, okay, one. Tonight, a week later, in the room. And then there's a third one. They're going to be down. Some of the guys are going to be down at the Sea of Galilee. And we get a listing. It gives a listing of seven people that are there. Simon Peter, Thomas, who's the twin, who is this guy, right? Nathan, and tells that he's from Cana in Galilee. The sons of Zebedee, that's James and John. And two other of his disciples were there. My question is, I start thinking, I wonder if these were apostles or some of the disciples. I already know there's seven people, and they're down there. And here's why they're there. Verse 3, "Simon Peter said to them, 'I'm going fishing.'" I hear in that a lot. There has been a lot of stuff going on. And I still think he's got rolling around in him the night when he denied him three times and then the rooster crows. I think that's still rolling around. I think he's damaged now from all this. So when I hear Simon Peter say this, I think, I know fishing. I'm going to go back and do what I know. I can't prove that. I just project my own experiences into that and think that's what he's in. Now, he's an alpha male. He's a leader kind of personality. I know he does crazy things, jumps in the water, you know, goes, if it's you, call me out there, I'm going to walk on the water. I mean, an alpha male is kind of a leader person because he says, I'm going fishing, and the rest of the guys, the other six, say to him, well, we're going to go with you. Yeah, you're,
I feel like he's maybe trying to go back.
Yeah.
To grab a little bit of him.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah, kind of like reconnect. Yeah, you'd be going through stuff for this week, like, wow, I can't wait to ask him. You ask him, and let me hear it, listen in. Because I know, you fly over there with your wings, okay, and then I won't be there.
But that's, yeah, so I'm just...
Yeah, I want to know. Yeah. What's going on? Okay, so they go with him. They went out, got in the boat. That night, they caught nothing. Sounds like the old days. And when the day was now breaking, Jesus stood on the beach, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. The guys on the road to Emmaus didn't know it was Jesus. He looks like Jesus, but not like Jesus. He's changed. Yeah. So Jesus said to them, children. Now, I'm not Jewish, so I don't know what this means. Is this like a playful phrase that you say? Or is this an insider phrase that he uses with them, that he's called them this before? The guys? Like, they are all younger than he is. Children, do you not have any fish, do you? He knows they haven't got any fish. They answered him, no. I'm sure it wasn't perky. I'm sure it was like, yeah, no, you know, something. So he says to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find a catch. So they cast, and then they were not able to haul it in because it was a great number of fish. Therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved, you know, John loves to say that about himself in his gospel, and he says to Peter, it's the Lord. You know, John is the meditative one. John's the one that sits on the rock, thinks deep thoughts, all that stuff. Peter is the man of action. He acts first, thinks later. Probably just act. If he's like me, he just acts and never thinks about it. He just does it. And you identify with that? Aha. Uh-huh. You and your, yeah. 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 I bet y'all are like that. I can kind of see that, the amount that I know y'all. Okay. So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put his outer garment on because he'd stripped down for work, and he threw himself into the sea. Yeah, I thought, I wonder if he had sandals. Did he like tie them around his neck? Was he just barefoot the whole time? I'm always trying to be a good detective. Not Peter Sellers, not the Pink Panther. Is that a Mickey you have with you in your room? You know, but you know, you want to be a good detective when you look at Scripture. I had a good time in worship, so I need to calm down. Verse 8. But the other disciples came in the little boat. Peter swam with his clothes on, and the rest of them came with the boat because they're pulling the net. For they were not far from the land, about 100 yards, that's a football field, away, dragging the net full of fish. So when they got out on the land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid and fish placed on it and bread. And Jesus says to them, bring some of the fish which you have now caught. Simon Peter went up and drew the net to the land full of large fish. In the Greek, when you total up the letters for the word fish in Koine Greek, it totals out to be 153. Because each letter also has a numerical base number to it. That's interesting. 153 fish. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. John is telling us something in this. There's deep stuff because John's a deep guy. He's got something in there.
Jim, can I ask a question?
No, but go ahead. Yes. What?
I understood the Hebrew had numeric value. Is it the Aramaic?
Hebrew has a numeric, the Old Testament writing, and the Koine Greek does.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, and so it roughly the same, like alpha equals one. So I have a copy of a New Testament where these guys went through and totaled up every single Greek word with a number under it. They drew a line, and it's all, I got photocopy pages of that. That's pretty fascinating. So because a lot of the scripture has got all this stuff that you and I are not used to. Like if I looked at Jennifer and I just immediately knew, say, Jennifer's name in English equals 67. Every time I see the word Jennifer, I know it also means 67. Jamie means 74. Now that's not true, but you know what I'm saying? That we would always have this math stuff running with words, just like we know that proper names are not just proper names to you and me. In their language, the name always has a word meaning to it. The name means something, and they have a numerical number that's attached to their name and to objects and stuff, their language system. Like clouds, the word clouds, 144. Interesting. So Jesus is coming with the clouds. So it says that that there'll be 144 thousands when he appears. Okay, isn't that interesting? Because that's the number for clouds, 144. I have to go back and look this up, but I think the word for saints equals, in Koine Greek, 144. There's a whole mathematical thing that you can do with all this. Okay, I don't know where my book is, so I'm not going to go get it because I got it upstairs somewhere. Okay, I know I've got you way off. This is what you get with a pastor's ADD and only on two cups of coffee. Okay, so down in, and it was torn. Okay, Jesus, breakfast. Okay, 13. I'm 12. Thank you. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples ventured to question him, "Who are you?" knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread, gave it to them, and the fish likewise. Now, this is the third time that Jesus was manifested to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. And when they had finished eating breakfast, Jesus says to Simon Peter, a whole little dialogue here is going on. Now, the only other time, but you know me, you know I love this, because I got this from John Sanford. He and Paula Sanford, who wrote Transformation of the Inner Man, and a lot of stuff, you know, if you know them. In John's book, he says only two times that the word charcoal mentioned in the New Testament was when the charcoal fire where Peter is denying Jesus and the charcoal fire on the beach. So it's what you're saying. Jesus is going to heal Peter the denial. So you got a charcoal fire. They've made fish. They're having fish there to eat. They've had breakfast. And now Jesus is starting this encounter with Simon Peter. Okay. So he says to him, "Simon Peter, Simon, son of John," this is making a real formal thing here, "do you agape me?" You know the three Greek words, agape, love like God, philia, which is love me like a brother, eros, love me with sort of a sexual, sensual meaning, okay? So Jesus says, "Do you agape me more than these?" And he says to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I philia you, I love you like a brother." And he says to him, "Tend my lambs." He doesn't answer him back the same way. "Do you love me with a godly love?" And he says, "I love you like a brother." So he's giving him an assignment. He's giving him a job description here, kind of. "Tend my lambs." Verse 16, he said to him again a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you agape me?" And he says to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I filio you, I love you like a brother." He says to him, "Shepherd my sheep." Rooster's crowing. I wonder if Peter's connecting even in this moment. Or is the lights gonna come on late? I mean, I can only imagine that this is an emotional moment. That Peter's eyes are watering. That Peter is in a swirl of of all of this stuff. He's asked me again. I'm being honest. He's asking me, do you love me with a God-like love? I'm not saying no. I'm just saying I love you like a brother. I love you with brotherly love. Well then, shepherd, he doesn't say well then, he says to him, shepherd my sheep. Tend the baby lambs. Shepherd my sheep, the bigger sheep, the older sheep. 17, he says to him the third time, Simon, here's the formal again, son of John, do you agape me? Nope, that's not what he says this time. In 17, Jesus lowers the measurement and says, do you love me with filial love? Like a brother. After the first two agapes are answered with brotherly love, he says, do you love me like a brother? Peter was grieved because he had said to him the third time, do you filial me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I filial you. Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. And then he prophesies to him. Now the other guys are there probably hearing all this, you know, because it's probably going on in front of these witnesses. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to gird yourself and walk wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will gird you and bring you where you don't wish to go. Now this he said, signifying by what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. What's the very first thing that Jesus said to Peter? Yeah, he said to Peter and Andrew, his brother, he says, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. These two fishing brothers. Because there were two brother teams, you know, James and John, they were fishermen, and then Peter and Andrew were fishermen. God knows your story. God sets you up sometimes, the circumstances, and all of a sudden you're walking out something with God that God remembered and wanted you to walk out again. When they crucify Peter, he says, I want you to crucify me upside down. I'm not worthy to be crucified the way that my master, Lord, was crucified. So they did. That's what history says. So Peter's turning around because Jesus is walking this out. He's starting to walk down the beach and has turned to Peter and said, follow me. Leaving the fire with the guys. Going to be a little personal time with him. Even more so. And the disciple whom Jesus loved followed them. That's John writing this. The one who had also leaned back on his bosom at the supper. You know, John is just into himself. You know, now, why would you say this? You know, the one that leaned back on Jesus at the Last Supper, because he was so close, that he was right next to him, that he leaned onto Jesus' chest and said, my eyes are watering so much I can't see. And said, Lord, who is the one who's going to betray you? And Jesus said to John, he's the one that's dipping his hand into the bowl with me. Of course, you got to admit, if you're nervy enough to do stuff, you get special little history things that other people don't get. John got one. Peter walked on water because he says, if it's you and not a ghost, tell me to come out there and walk to you. And he walks on water for a few minutes. how many, I'll know someday, but not now, how many more stories would I have to share about what God did if I just had enough nerve in the moment to do the idea that I had? They're all fading now, but I have a time and time again the Spirit go, why don't you go do this? Why don't you go say that to that person? Why don't you? And I talk myself out of it. Sometimes I was embarrassed. Sometimes I thought it was silly. Some of it I just thought, oh, the voice is making it up. It's not really God. But the other stories, the other times that I actually did it, not because I was cool and smart, just because it wouldn't leave me alone. You know, and he'd done it about 12 times. Just leave me alone. I'm going to go do it. And you go and do it, and you got a story to tell on a Sunday. Almost all of them are like that. I am the second brother. Two brothers. The father says to the first one, go out into the vineyard. I want you to work. And he says, okay, and doesn't go. And the second brother, he says, I want you to go out in the vineyard and work. And he says, I'm not going. And then he goes. That is me. Every single story I have to tell you. I can't think of one time probably that the Spirit said, Jim, go do this. Sure. No, I backed my way into it. I stalled. I did all the, I would have missed it. It's just, oy vey. So Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? About John. And Jesus said to him, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Just sign your name right on that one. You follow me, 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 you follow me. I am not going to be responsible for your job, but I am going to be responsible for mine. There's the great white throne judgment that's before the Father. All that have been born will stand before the Father and report their life. But there's another one, which is all of the children of God are going to come before Jesus and give an account of what they did. And I can't swap mine for yours, and you can't swap yours for me. I don't think you'll be afraid. You might be. I may totally miss this. I don't suspect I'll be afraid, but I think there'll be a lot of tears. All the stuff I missed out on. And then that'll pass. And then there's going to be a great party. And we probably won't even speak of that again. And it's not just the 24 elders that keep throwing their crowns down before him. It'll be something like, Karen, you've thanked me 1.21 million times. Okay. That you don't have to do it again right now. Or just wait a while. What's that to you? You follow me. And therefore, this saying went out among the brethren that this disciple wouldn't die. Yet Jesus didn't say to him that he would not die. Of course, John's writing about himself. But only, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? Now, that's interesting because of all the disciples, John lives the longest. They boil him in oil and he still lives. Bunch of stuff, you know. We have the revelation of Jesus Christ because John was worshiping on a Sunday and God gave him all this stuff and symbols, this imagery we have. Verse 24, and this is a disciple who is testifying to these things and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true and that there are also many other things which Jesus did, which if they were written in detail, I suppose that even the world itself would not contain the books that would be written. Now, earlier, I thought I was going to go on to Acts 1, but I'm used up. That took there was an, up here, it got real intense. I don't know, you know, what is he saying to us today? What's something that, it doesn't even have to be about this. You know, when God comes, he starts all these stories in the room and they don't have anything to do with what I was saying. Has anybody got something that you want to share for a second? Apple's got a new app, but it's not working properly. Yeah, it's been rolling around my head the last couple of days. working on different things. They keep giving us all these numbers of young people not in church, not doing anything. I don't hold them responsible. I hold the Christians responsible. If we know him, like Peter, follow me. If we know him, then we have a natural outflowing testimony of someone who knows the living God. And they're simply not being around anybody that really knows God. They just don't know anybody. They know church people. They see church signs. They see now the church signs that were white and every church had one of them with a little air on it. And now they're in full living color. And they're just as useless as they were when they were just white signs with black letters on there. They need walking examples of people who know God. I was calculating the other day. When I went to Auburn for the fall of 1970, and then I ended up changing, going to Alabama and all this stuff. There was a couple of things. One person was a guy named Josh McDowell. Josh is still alive. He worked for Campus Crusade for Christ, and he was an apologist or apologetic. He did apologetics, defense of Christianity. He later came out with books and stuff, and so that's 49 years ago I saw this guy. But the main example, the only one example, I mean, I remember he gave a thing called the theological argument and there's two or three arguments that you could use in defense of Christianity. But the one that stood the most out was, he says, you know, the person with the argument is always at the mercy of the person with an experience. And, of course, as college students, we all look like dogs. You know, when you turn our heads, I was like, what? What are you talking about? He says, let me give you an example. If I come up to you and I tell you that my life's been changed. Yeah, my grades are, I'm making all A's. I'm on the dean's list and all this stuff. I was barely passing. I thought I was going to be thrown out of school. But I did something. What did you do? I met this guy and he said, you know what? My life's been changed. Yeah. Now, my grades are changed and all this, and this is what I did. I just wanted to tell you about it. I took a stewed tomato, and I put it in my right tennis shoe, and then I put my foot in there. From the time that I did that, school just totally changed for me. So you know what I did? I went and got me a stewed tomato. I put it in my shoe. I put my foot in it. You know what? My life has changed. Now, it was a crazy illustration, but I had a lot of students when I used to teach art. And they would say in their own words, you are so different. Yep. Sometimes they meant weird, you know. Sometimes they meant weird and spiritual. Sometimes it was just the spiritual talking about right then. But, you know, I would experiment on them. You know, they're in the room. There's one in the back. They got hiccups. I don't want to write a pass. I just sit there and kind of hold my hand up like this behind my podium where I could check their artwork. And usually there was one or two students always standing around going, what are you doing, Mr. Bentley? I'm praying for his hiccups. And the guy in the back went, what are you doing? My hiccups have stopped. And of course, one of them would say, well, he was praying for you. And then there was the cheerleader that had a migraine headache. And we had two deep freezes because the art room was the old kitchen area. And so that the storeroom had deep freezes still in there. And so she couldn't go home. She called, nobody was there. She was having a migraine that, you know, they were going to have, she's already in her uniform and stuff. And I said, hey, you can roll this up. This is some still life stuff. Lay on top of the deep freeze. We're going to sketch outside. And there's another student. I said, but just for a second, could I pray for you for a second? She said, yeah. And the other girl standing there beside her. So I put my fingers on her forehead and I prayed for her and asked the Lord to heal the migraine. And then I went outside with the other students. Later, I came by to check on them, and she wasn't there. And I saw the other student. I said, did she go home? No, her headache went away. So she goes to Wayne Finley, the American history teacher, one day, a little while later, and says, hey, don't you think Mr. Bentley's really weird? Yeah, well, yeah, on a lot of reasons, but he said, what in particular? Well, I had this migraine, he prayed for it. And Wayne says, yeah, what happened? It went away. So then the high school principal came to Wayne, who knew me really well, and said, Wayne, could you tell Mr. Bentley to quit doing divine healing in the art room? So Wayne says, hey, principal sent me with a message for you. Okay. It was the moment, you know. You do what you got to do, kind of.